Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
Sage Rosenfels with Dan Bernstein.
Rosenfels with the ball, the bootleg, fake the pass, dives for the end zone, and in for the touchdown. Sage Rosenfels, brilliant on that first drive.
Sage Rosenfels on 670 The Score.
You're thinking, wait, was there a Bears game? Are we breaking down the performance of Mitchell Trubisky or Nick Foles? No. We've got a new name to discuss here. Sage Rosenfels is on Twitter at SageRosenfels18. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. He's also on Twitch, so check him out, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. What's going on, Sage? How you been?
I'm good. Just got done mowing the yard. In my mind, preparing for this interview, I have a maple tree in my backyard, and I have, I think, a world record of helicopter seeds in my backyard. I double mowed it. All right, so now I'm like basically the Wrigley Field outfield mower at this point, making things look sort of cool to try to grind up those seeds. So that's what I'm doing, and here to discuss this new quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
And regardless of your best efforts, there are going to be maple saplings that are going to appear that you're going to have to show up and yank out of the ground. So keep your eye open for them, because it's inevitable.
So I'm one of those, you know, weird hippies that I have these four by eight boxes that are on the south side of my property that have gardens in them flowers, but also some vegetables and things like that. Anyway, those things were filled yesterday, and I'm out there with my blower, my leaf blower, blowing off not only the seeds, but the top layer of the loose dirt that are in my gardens. And so that was I had a weird moment. Yes. Like, look, what am I doing? But as you said, those things will find their way, and I will have plenty of trees to pick out as the summer goes on.
And if someone named Sage doesn't have an herb garden out there with that southern exposure, then we're not doing it right. So we know the Bears have made a move that has got all of us excited, and I'm ready. I don't want to wait. I want to see Justin Fields. I don't need to see a snap of Andy Dalton. I don't know if the Bears care what I think, but it seems the Bears themselves are really excited about this. What did you think when you first realized that this was their move, that all of a sudden so many things had to happen to give them this opportunity, and they met it halfway and took advantage of it?
Yeah, so there was the QB1 tweet, which sort of starts this conversation, right? Which, at the end of the day, no one really will care about, right? Andy Dalton's not—he's not feeling slighted today. But you got to think, even with that situation, and they say in QB1 that they were still on the lookout. If they could get Dak Prescott somehow, or get some player away from another team, you know, Deshaun Watson before all that whole thing went down, or in this situation, get to one of these, you know, sort of five guys or four, you know, they may have had him as the second guy. I think that opportunity was always sort of, that door was always open. I think we all sort of knew that. But I think Andy Dalton would be actually, I actually think he's a pretty good player. He's not a guy that makes everybody much better around him. But to be honest with you, Andy Dalton in Minnesota the last couple of years probably would have won more games than Kirk Cousins. Okay, so that's where I think of Andy Dalton, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I do. And he, you know, he's a pretty good athlete, and he ran spread stuff in college. So he actually, and he's good at getting the ball out quick. He actually fits I think this offense, this dink and dunk, spread around thing, and a little bit of quarterback running, probably better than Trubisky and Foles. But having said that, even better, at least from a ceiling standpoint, is Justin Fields. I mean, he is a talented kid. I worked with him when he was 17 years old, going into his senior in high school. And right off the bat, he was the best quarterback at our camp. He had the best arm. He threw the straightest ball. And athletically, I was like, this kid has the body of a running back. And here we go, 4-4-3. With the deep ball, honestly, it seems like to me, and I don't watch a ton of Ohio State football. I know in Chicago, they're probably on basically every Saturday. But he seems to throw a good deep ball, throws a beautiful ball, right? Trubisky did not throw. Trubisky's throwing motion, by the way, I never really got into it too much, but it was it's bad, right? His mechanics are bad. All right, they're sort of all over the place, and they're loose, and he brings his left shoulder a certain way. There are things that cause him repeatedly to be an inaccurate quarterback, but also to not regularly throw a great spiral, by the way. All right, Justin Fields, he had, I think, some mechanic issues too that I would sort of change with him just a little bit. But he is a natural thrower. I think they've taught him to throw unnaturally. Remember Aaron Rodgers at Cal Berkeley or Cal? He threw like the Steve Spurrier style ball up Jeff Tedford, Oregon thing. That held him back. All right, he was a good thrower, but man, he brought that thing down, and all of a sudden now he's more of a magician out there. I think what he's been taught by Ryan Day at Ohio State is a more mechanical throwing motion and footwork that I think needs to improve for him to be, you know, he needs to add that Mac Jones element to it. Mac Jones has great rhythm. All right, he has great timing. He reads coverages as he's dropping back. He's not dropping back to see if one's open. He's dropping back to see if he should eliminate one and two. So then he can get to three by the first hitch. Does that make sense?
It does.
Your progression's faster. They at Ohio State and a lot of college offenses, it is quarterback, go back, look at number one. If he's not open, move your feet to number two. If he's not open, move your feet to number three, and so on. That is staring down your first receiver, right? They're teaching that. In the NFL, I think the good offenses, you know, the people who do that sort of West Coast, a little more rhythm timing, there's a rhyme and a reason behind it. And so you can have the exact same timing as your wide receivers, but also so a quarterback can actually progress through plays and work across the board and eliminate first things based off, you know, versus this coverage, that's one and two, but I'm not going to like that. I'm going to come back side and boom, hit a dig right behind that Will linebacker because everything is flowing to the right because you are looking right, right? Like that is a hard thing to teach. He's never been taught that. I don't know how well Matt Nagy and that crew there do teach that style. But I think if you could add some of that Mac Jones flavor to his game, now you're talking about a tremendous quarterback. I think this kid could be really good. I do. He is, you know, he's not the biggest guy, right? So, you know, taking a lot of hits is not going to be good for him, but he is a compact, strong, athletic kid that can throw a really good ball that by all means that I see, smart kid, shouldn't have trouble learning the offense, learning the audible system, understanding protections. I do think Ryan Day does a pretty good job of that, better than his predecessor, you know, the coach down in Jacksonville and having a
Urban Meyer.
A blank on Urban Meyer, right? I think he does do better quarterback development stuff. So, I think he could be really good. I do. You know, I've always had reservations about the actual offense, as I've said on this show. What type of offense will it be now? I'm asking you this question. Is it going to be what they ended the year with, which was a little more just sort of line up, sometimes two tight ends, play action, a little bootleg, right, get the ball out? Or is it going to be back to what Matt Nagy brought, which is that spread it out, four wides, five wides, jet sweeps, you know, quarterback-dependent offense? That I don't know. And so I'm sort of curious what type of offense we're going to see too.
My guess it's going to be the latter because now, once again, Matt Nagy can dream. He can feel that he's got his toys, that he's able to put them all out there again and play with them. We enjoyed last week talking to Ron Veal, who is, like you are, a member of the consortium, the Quarterback Collective. And Ron Veal, who's been coaching Justin Fields for a long time, he said the most important thing that he taught him was not just knowing that you could run away from everybody at the first sign of pressure, saying, hang in, you know, reset your platform, keep your eyes down the field. And what I'm interested in seeing is how, from an early stage, they maximize his athleticism while also making sure he's not bugging out too early.
You know, by the way, Ron Veal, what a great guy. And I hope you enjoyed him. You should have him on the show more. All right. He's a firefighter that then quarterback, you know, the quarterback trainer as like a second job or whatever with all these kids. And he's had Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields in eighth grade. Right. But I see him as also bigger, like a mentor. All right. Actually training these young men. I can see it. I can see it in his Twitter and his Instagram and the way I talk to him and the way he works with kids. You should have him on your show more. People will love him. He's not a huge personality, but a great guy. But I think what he has always done, and he's a guy who played quarterback at Arizona back in the day, right? Probably, I'm not sure the years, maybe the 80s, okay? Black quarterbacks in the 80s, known as runners, runners only, right? They're not smart enough to actually learn an NFL offense, right?
If they were allowed to stay a quarterback, if they weren't switched to safety.
Justin Fields should be a safety. He should be a running back. He should be a slot receiver. He should be something else because he's not smart enough, right? So I know for a fact that Ron Veal, as a guy who grew up in that world, I imagine wants to teach quarterbacks to be throwers first. Yes, I am smart enough to be a thrower first. I don't need to use this athleticism unless I need to or we want to.
It's so funny you say that is because when he was drafted and people are making talking about and the Trubisky experience and trying to be fair and not using the negative stigma of the Trubisky experience. The one thing I said I'm certain of is that he's smarter than Mitch Trubisky.
You know, I'm not going to get into Trubisky's smarts because I don't know. I've never been around him, but I was confused a lot in general. And maybe sometimes my criticisms of the offense were that, you know, Trubisky was reading the complete wrong thing. I really have no idea. But I this kid seems really smart to me. He seems smart at 17. He seems smart in all the, you know, the things I see on TV and his interviews and things like that. You know, the question is also about how does he process information? This is an interesting thing. Christian Ponder is a smart person. He's a smart guy. Right. He was a 4.0 or whatever in college and smart in high school. But he couldn't process information. And that what you don't really know, I think, as player or a player doesn't really know or a coach doesn't know until they actually get him in there and you start throwing information on. But not only all that information, but then actually on the field, how their mind processes what I was taught and what I see and how my body moves. And that we don't know. Right. That's not really having to do with smarts or if he gives a good interview or any of those types of things. Because you see that all the time, but then guys don't process information well. Right. Mm-hmm. My question is, how is he process physical information? Physical information, which has nothing to do with an interview. Right. And can he see what we were talking about and then move his body, you know, in a way to get to number 4 or 5 regularly? And his mind just works really fast as he's playing football. I think you don't know that until you actually, and that's where we have like the 50-50 or 25% rule because very few really do. Tom Brady and Drew Brees process information so fast, they get the ball out so fast that they don't have to be super athletic to be Hall of Fame players and great players in those positions. That's not easy to find, and you know we'll see if the Bears found that with that high pick.
Talking with Sage Rosenfels on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. Layla is out today. We are on Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon. You mentioned Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. That's a team you also cover. It has been reported that they had designs on Justin Fields and that not only are the Bears seeing the Packers in disarray, that the Vikings are trying to figure out what's going on at that position. There's some uncertainty and some discomfort there as well. What is going on with the Minnesota quarterback room at the moment?
Well, I've got a question to you. When they signed Kirk Cousins to the 3-year, $84 million deal, were you scared? Or were you as an opposing fan?
I just thought, meh. I thought, okay.
Meh. When they signed after the couple years and they signed to extension, then what was your reaction?
Fine. Going into a game saying, oh, boy,
we got to play against Kirk Cousins twice a year. Oh, man. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that doesn't strike fear to your heart.
The mistake to me of signing the extension that was a huge, that to me, that's a big blunder. Rick Spielman, he's traded for me twice. And I say this a lot of humbleness. All right. He struggles to find quarterbacks. He tries all the different avenues. He overpays in free agency. He signs guys in the seventh round. He trades for guys like me. He trades for a guy like AJ Philly in Miami. You know, who can I bring in? Right. As part of, they've had so many quarterbacks there. And it's, but he's, he seems to be great to find defensive ends, because they would have a ridiculously good or two defensive ends up there, right? But they have struggled, and they drafted this kid in the third round. He looks like a great, though stiff, athletic quarterback. He seems stiff to me.
Yeah, he could throw it, though. Kellen Mond can
throw it. Seems like he can throw
it
forever. Now, so I don't know. I don't know where they were looking. I will say this. I hope maybe I can get some information from Clint Kubiak. I called him the other day, right before the draft. I was just, I want to talk about Ian Book with him a little bit, you know, who I trained and stuff. And anyway, we had this great conversation, and I said, like, who do you like? And he was like, we'll have this conversation sometime this summer, because I'm not saying anything, you know. So I'd like to know what he thought at sometimes of Justin Fields, and he'll probably give me the politically correct answer, you know. But I think everyone liked Justin Fields. No one had him worse than the Patriots took Mac Jones at 15. So they're all gone at 15. So, like, everyone had these guys as high, you know, fairly high draft picks. So we'll see which ones pan out. It's a super interesting draft. I think it's one we should talk about for a long time, because not only the, where the players are picked into who and all these things, but their skill sets and how different they were, and how, you know, this kid, Zach Wilson, like nobody plays like that. We haven't seen too much of that sort of freewheeling Aaron Rodgers-y sort of stuff from in his small kid, right? People aren't scared of watching the, get drafting the small kid anymore with Kyler Murray's success and how that's changing, and Russell Wilson's thing. So it's a super interesting draft, has a little of everything. And the Bears, you know, we'll see if they got a good one. See, they finally got that guy that can be their two-time Super Bowl winning, you know, 6 NFC championships games, just run the NFC North. The black and blue is back, baby, for the next 12. We'll see if that happens. Probably not, sadly, it's the way it goes, but we'll see if that happens, and it'd be a lot of fun if the Bears had a great quarterback for one.
Real quick, let's get to Ian Book. I was going to bring him up because of the time that you spent helping to train him. What a fascinating situation for a developing quarterback to be in, where they've got Winston and they have their Swiss Army knife ahead of him, and being able to be in a room with Sean Payton has to be a great thing for a young quarterback. He's obviously not going to play. And does that work out for the best?
I think Ian Book spending a good year or 2 years or 3 years and sort of doing it the way I did it, where you're just trying to play a lot in preseason games, get a little time here and there during the season. But New Orleans with Sean Payton, San Francisco, Green Bay, the Rams, probably the Patriots, I guess. There's certain the Cleveland Browns, now it's Stefanski. There are certain teams that I would want my quarterback to be drafted to. And when that team, the New Orleans Saints, in the dome, with Sean Payton, when they drafted him, I was so happy for Ian. All right, I mean, what an opportunity, okay? I mean, and to not play right away, but to learn as much as you can as from this guy. Stop running around so much. He's a great athlete. He's a very good thrower, but he runs around too much, right? So they're going to be watching film of Drew Brees, the guy who didn't run around very much at all, use his athleticism to be a great passer. And I think it's just a perfect situation for him. I hope he doesn't play very much. I hope he plays a lot in the preseason. I hope he gets a little time this year. But he is one of those guys that is an athletic quarterback, is one of those sort of what we think is the quarterback of the future, who's not just a thrower, but is a very good thrower, can be a very good thrower, but then does have that extra element that you can play with. You know how great it is for a coordinator to have a guy that's just pretty athletic, so in the red zone they can do a quarterback zone read or something like that? It is huge. It adds points every game. It's third down and one, and you can do that stuff. Not all the time, but to do that, and Ian Book can do those things, that's huge for a coordinator and an offense.
You know what else, and you don't think about these things, but you just talk about marginal added value, is scout team. that if you have somebody who is able to impersonate more athletic quarterbacks, who can just actually show your defense when you're doing cards at the end of the week, that can actually give you that kind of simulation, that that has value.
You know, I did that for most of my career. And actually, as I got further along, I got better at it. Like when I was at the Texans and we played the Colts, my whole job was to try to be Peyton Manning. I mean, I was doing everything. I was calling out random stuff and pointing at people and giving thumbs up, walking back, moving my running back over, my legs sort of like in that shoulder width position, you know, changing it up again and doing it. I mean, and then I would throw like him. Like I sort of have the ability to throw like Breeze or throw like Aaron Rodgers or throw like Peyton Manning. I became Peyton Manning that way.
Method acting, right? Yeah,
method acting, yeah, completely. And a lot of guys couldn't do that. I will say this. Ian Book is a great leader. If you go into that Notre Dame locker room, and this, I think, was why teams really did like him, he's just a super likable guy. I don't know what it is, but there is like a magneticism about him that people like being around him. I think he treats people right. I think for being the greatest, the winningest, all-time winningest Notre Dame quarterback ever, right? He's a pretty humble kid. His dad was a SWAT team captain, all right? So I don't know. There's just something about him that is very likable, and that I think teams see. But he does have some work to do. He has to sort of get that rhythm and understand defenses better and just learn the game. But sitting for him would be under Sean Payton is like the best thing that ever happened to him.
Sage Rosenfels, great time as always. Look forward to talking again as we get closer to the season, get into OTAs, get into some training camp stuff over the summer. So go police your yard from the growing maple trees. I can hear them implanting themselves as we speak.
That's what they're doing. I'll get that blower out again, see if I can work any more magic in my yard.
Sage Rosenfels, the former NFLer, always a delightful guest on these airwaves. Appreciate it much. Next up, I have I guess my hope as to what is happening today in the world of the White Sox, a realistic hope on an off day for what absolutely should be done somehow, some marshalling of forces, some way of trying to salvage what's happening here. Because you've got a day without a game where there can be some meetings, there can be some phone calls. I'll get into more specifics next on the Bernstein Rahimi Show. Just us today with Layla out, expecting her back tomorrow on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Because today it happened in the White Sox game. On the ground, a third, gobbled up Duffy, sling to first, Betts is out. And
I've never seen that. Mookie Betts 0 for 5?
Yeah, right?
Wow. Sorry, Boog.
No, not at all.
Wow.
But the thing that I was going to say was that in that game, the White Sox played the Reds, and they got to that spot, and Tony La Russa didn't know the rule, and he had Liam Hendricks run when he could have had a position player. I think he could have had a Abreu run.
Yeah, and nobody else on Tony's staff apparently knew that.
That's right.
And I don't, you know, that's one, you know, people are, White Sox fans are clearly not happy with Tony.
Right.
There's been some other issues, but that's one.
Well, here's the thing.
I could see a lot of managers swinging and missing on that one.
Well, they instituted that rule last year, and then they instituted universal DH. So that rule was in existence last year, but not used. And then for this year, what, for Tony, for 153 games this year, that rule won't
be in effect.
Won't be in effect, and for 9, it will.
It's interesting because it happened, though, and now everybody around the league will be on high alert and presumably not make the same mistake.
You have to know the rules. You have to know the rules. You have to know the rules. It doesn't matter how arcane it is. That is the manager's job. And we don't know whether or not that slipped past everybody on the team, everybody on the bench, everybody in the front office who can pick up a phone or can text somebody immediately. It takes a village. and you had plenty of time to have all of the institutional knowledge of your team available to you. The processes are broken here, too. That's the other point. It isn't just La Russa on an island. It has to be him caring about what he doesn't know. Caring about what he doesn't know, and he doesn't. Because he doesn't have to. Because there's zero accountability. Because he's bulletproof. Nothing he does has to matter. That's the problem here. It isn't about, well, you know, it's tough. A lot of people didn't know this. Okay, it's still his job to know what he doesn't know and have it not leave your closer out there in a place where he could get hurt and not leave a pitcher on third when you're going to idiotically try to steal second, meaning that Tucker Barnhart has got a terrific arm, can throw down with impunity and no worry that the closer is going to risk a hamstring injury breaking from third and coming home. Come on. You can do everything you can do to mitigate some of this stuff, but let's call it what it is, and let's realize that today on this off day, man, as desperate a situation as it is, and I know that they've stripped Rick Hahn of a great deal of power here because he didn't hire Tony La Russa. He didn't. He had nothing to do with it, and he didn't want it. He wanted to hire A.J. Hinch. And that's who they should have hired and could have hired, and they didn't. But somebody... I don't know how it happens. I don't know who makes the phone call. Get everybody in a room. Or if somebody's got to go and grovel at the desk of Jerry Reinsdorf and something, do an intervention at some level. This has to stop happening. This is four. It's May 6th. This is the fourth game we can point to as being in some way compromised or nearly compromised by a manager who didn't know what he was doing. You've got a day today. You've got an off day. Figure something out. It can't just be muttering behind the scenes. It can't just be this learned helplessness of, well, what are you going to do? It's Jerry's guy. He's protected. What are you going to do? It can't just be blowing up my phone with texts and emails from people in and around who say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Help. What do we do? This sucks for us. Yeah, it does. You got to do something. Whether it's Rick and Kenny, somebody has to ask Jerry if this is really what he wanted. If it's okay that he's compromising his team's best chance to win, especially now when some of these marginal managerial decisions are magnified. The throwing away of outs. You can't do that. You can't do it when you had Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert to help slug your way out of this stuff. You don't have that cushion anymore. No more Billy Hamilton with his weighted runs created plus of six. Not 60. Six. That's his WRC plus. And somehow he's got a bat in his hands in a leverage situation. Stop that now. The giving away outs on the base paths. Stop that now. Get a process in place. Get procedures in place. Have some kind of come to Jesus meeting with everybody involved here. Make this stop happening. I don't know how you do it. Maybe you can't. Maybe Reinsdorf is already sort of... put in place the rules. Don't question me on this. This is mine. He can do what he wants. Everything he does is right because he's the Hall of Famer baseball person. I don't know. I don't know what you have to do. This is it's already a disaster. Everybody knows it. And within the White Sox, everybody except for Jerry Reinsdorf and Tony La Russa, everyone knows it, regardless of what they're saying publicly. They know he's not competent. And then after the fact to say that the stolen base was still a good idea, I mean, that's amazing to me. Forget not knowing the rule. Well, don't forget it. But outside of not knowing the rule, to then say, oh, yeah, they're trying to steal that base there. No, you don't. There's no reason whatsoever to have Leury García try to steal that base. And with your closer standing on third, and with Billy Hamilton batting, where they could double up Billy Hamilton, and you say you're looking for a fly ball, that's not his game. Know your own players. I mean, this guy just doesn't know what he's doing. Deron Jackson said it yesterday. In the game, in the moment, I don't know what we're doing out there. DJ said, I don't know what we're doing out there. And he said it angrily. And he should be angry. This is, if the White Sox took what could have been a glorious year and have decided for no reason at all, for no reason at all, to make themselves the butt of jokes. And it sucks. Next up, we'll hear from Zach LaVine. He's returning to action tonight with the Bulls in Charlotte. I don't know why he's returning to action, because I would rest everybody and try to lose out from here on in to try to keep that 1-4 protected draft pick, but he's coming back, and I guess Vooch is scheduled to play as well. So talk about working at cross purposes. That appears to be what the Bulls are doing, but he was kind of hazy the way he discussed his experience apparently with COVID, but we'll play some of that next on The Score.
You wish you would have had that one back?
No.
Mully and Haw mornings, 5 to 9.
Reacting to the Bears' round one draft pick of Justin Fields.
This is God's plan for me to be a Bear, so I'm more than excited.
God's plan.
I love that song, that Drake song. Yep, feel good sometimes.
Yep.
I don't. Yeah.
I feel good sometimes. I don't.
A lot of bad things. They're wishing and wishing and wishing.
A lot of bad things that they wish and wish.
God's plan. Sing the song. And it's a lot of bad things being said about him.
Mully and Haw.
Mornings, 5 to 9 a.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
An Odyssey station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Zach LaVine scheduled to return to action with the Chicago Bulls tonight after a lengthy absence due to COVID protocols. And he had put a tweet out there, did LaVine, saying something about how oppressive some of these protocols were. And then he deleted the tweet. Well, he met the media via Zoom yesterday, and Casey Johnson asked him about it.
You had a tweet at one point that you deleted where you were just kind of obviously expressing some frustration over the protocols. What was the thinking behind that, or what was your mindset when you did that?
I was just frustrated, man, you know, because the range is varied, you know, or it was varied for some of the players. And, you know, for me, it just felt like it was taking a really long time. I've been out almost 4 weeks, you know, and some guys came back after, you know, 10 days or 12 days. So, you know, I don't want to put all the blame on the league, you know, because obviously I have to go through certain things. So, you know, I was just more frustrated that I wasn't able to go out there and compete and help the team win. You know, we were sitting at, you know, anywhere from 8th to 10th the whole season. And, you know, to see us slip in the standings has been, you know, it's been tough. So, you know, hopefully I can come back and try to help.
Because there were no other teammates involved with it, was it contact tracing from the outside? Were you able to figure out at least how you got put into the quarantine or how you got put into the protocol?
No, I don't know where I got it from. You know, obviously, I think I'm one of the more careful guys, and you know, I did everything the right way, but, you know, obviously I got put into it. So it's just, you know, it's scary. And, you know, I'm thankful that nobody else got it, and nobody else obviously had contact tracing from it as well. So I think that was a good thing.
And the other thing, you know, obviously Billy said he was talking to you throughout this thing, and there was a lot of frustration on your end, obviously because you couldn't be out there and play. How tough was that? Did you feel like you were watching something that you wanted and other guys wanted kind of slip away? I mean, mathematically it's still there, but like you pointed out, it's going to be tough with the amount of games left and just where you are with Washington and what would have to happen in the next 10 days.
Yeah, obviously, because when you're sitting there, you can't do anything about it. You know, in my position, all I can do is watch. I can't be around the team. You know, the best you can do is communicate through, you know, phone calls or texts. And, you know, earlier in the season, you know, it's easier for me to fight through an ankle injury. You know, I had a grade 2 ankle sprain. I could play through that, but you know, this is something I couldn't fight and try to play through. So that's what kind of hurt me the most. And just seeing where I could go out there and help it, you know, we're all honest, you know, we weren't, you know, obviously in great playoff contention when I was playing either. You know, we still need to work on things, but I think I could have helped with some games.
You kind of mentioned, obviously, like you guys are not officially obviously eliminated yet, but was there ever any discussion about, because of the math, because of the certain amount of games, as far as shutting you down for the rest of the season, was that something that was not on the table for you?
I mean, I'm not that type of guy. If that conversation comes up, you know, obviously it won't be coming from me. I ain't played in the last, obviously, obviously 11 games, and I want to at least be able to try to get some type of games and try to fight for something at the end of the season. So, you know, if that conversation comes up, it may not. But, you know, for me, you know, I want to go out there and play.
Well, he is going to play, and he's probably going to help them win enough games to allow the Orlando Magic to claim that unprotected pick. It would be nice if the Bulls could work their way into that top four, but they are determined to not try to do that. I would say, you know, let's just take the rest of the season off to make sure you're okay, make sure you don't have any heart inflammation or any other secondary or tertiary lingering COVID effects. But they're going to guarantee you they're going to end up winning enough games to convey that draft pick. Lawrence Holmes joins us for Transition next on The Score.
This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
And Rizzo hits a ground ball, left field, base hit. The Cubs are going to win the ball game. Here comes Duffy to score. The Cubs have swept the Los Angeles Dodgers.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score, official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. An Odyssey Station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.